called The Progeny of the Daughters of Daksha. So the chapter introduction is as follows. As described in this chapter, Prajapati Daksha begot six daughters in the womb of his wife, Asikni. These daughters were given in charity to various persons to increase the population. Since the offspring of Daksha were women, Narada Muni did not try to lead them toward the renounced order of life. Thus, the daughters were saved from Narada Muni. 10 of the daughters were given in marriage to Dharma Raja. 13 to Kashyapa Muni, and 27 to the moon god Chandra. In this way, 50 daughters were distributed, and of the other 10 daughters, 4 were given to Kashyapa, and 2 each to Buddha, Gira, and Krishaswa. One should know that it is because of the union of these 60 daughters with various exalted personalities that the entire universe was filled with various kinds of living entities, such as human beings, demigods, demons, beasts, birds, and serpents. So let's do text one. Okay. Shri Shukuvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said. Tataha. After that incident, Prachetasaha, Daksha, Asikshnau, and his wife named Asikni, Anunitaha, pacified, Swayambhuva, by Lord Brahma, Shastim, 60, Sanjanaiha Masa begot Duhitri daughters Hitri Vatsalaha, all very affectionate to their father. Translation. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, thereafter at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Daksha, who was known as Prachetasa, begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife, Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate toward their father. So you can repeat. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, thereafter at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Daksha, who was known as Prachetasa, he got 60 daughters in the womb of his wife, Asikni. All the daughters were very affectionate toward their father. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. After the incidents concerning the loss of his many sons, Daksha repented his misunderstanding with Narada Muni. Lord Brahma then saw Daksha and instructed him to beget children again. This time, Daksha was very cautious to beget female children instead of male children, so that Narada Muni would not disturb them by urging them to accept the renounced order. Females are not meant for the renounced order of life. They should be very faithful to their good husbands, for if a husband is competent for liberation, his wife will also achieve liberation with him. As stated in the Shastra, the results of a husband's pious activities are shared by his wife. Therefore, a woman's duty is to be very chaste and faithful to her husband, then without separate endeavor, she will share in all the profit the husband earns. Shri Shukla Vacha Tata Pachetaso Sikshnam Anunita Swayam Bhuva Shastim Sanjaniyam Masa Dvitri Pitri Vatsala. So, Om Magana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tosmai Shigurve Namaha. So, one of the questions we get nowadays when preaching to the Western people, because I'm also a Western body person, Krishna West, is why can't women take sannyasa? That's one of the very common questions. Or even if they don't know that women can't take sannyas, the question is, can women take sannyas? And even if they don't want to ask that question, is when can I take sannyas? The women are asking the question, when can I take sannyas? Of course, sometimes women have such a husband that they're asking, let me take sannyas. So you have these various questions that are asked by people about women taking sannyas. And invariably, I mean, we have to repeat the Vedic version. We can't really change things in the name of Krishna West. We can't change the philosophy and say, oh yes, in Krishna West, people will be taking, the women will be taking sannyas. Of course, there are groups where they have sannyasi meetings, and there's whole groups based upon women, you know, just independent women. I won't mention their names, you know, the BKs, not BK Goswami, but BK. There's another group, we won't mention their name. So, why is this? I mean, is it that we are just simply chauvinistic against women in the Krishna Conscious Movement? I mean, I just remember before I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, I was a member of a particular religion, which shall remain nameless. And in the traditional temples or churches, I'm not going to debate away what religion it is, the women would have to remain in a separate room with a whole curtain between the men and the women. Separate room, not even in the same room, not even on the other side of the temple room. Yeah. This is a Orthodox Judaism, not conservative or reform. In reform, anything goes. They don't even believe in God in reform. As one religious teacher just told me, there's no God, students. When you're dead, you're dead. That was in Jewish Hebrew school. It was interesting. And that encouraged me to take up Krishna consciousness. Because I did believe in God in spite of the religious teachers' injunctions about there being no God. So anyway, so is this just like, or let's take the Muslim religion, for example, where in many branches of the Muslim religion, the ladies wear these burqas. I mean, I was in Fiji one time, and I was sitting in an airplane flying from one part of Fiji to another, and there was a lady sitting next to me just wearing a burqa. And I was a little scared. I didn't know what she had under her, guns or anything like that. And at the same time, the temperature was like 98 degrees out. And in airplanes, the small airplanes in Fiji, it doesn't get cool until you get up in the air. It's not that they have air conditioning on the ground, because they turn the engines off and they don't have this like ventilation system that comes from the airport itself or the portable ventilators. Anyway, so you see this, and then in extreme chauvinism, in certain countries, where if radical Muslims discover girls in school, they'll kidnap them, like that Boko Haram group, or they'll throw acid in their faces. Hellish, isn't it? How the ladies are treated. So are we in the Krishna Conscious Movement pretty much on the same track as all these different religions? And I would say no, because Krishna consciousness is based upon the soul, not upon the body. And that means that each and every person has an equal opportunity for spiritual advancement to become Krishna conscious. It's not like some chauvinistic people from India say that to the women, the best you can do, become real attached to your husband, and the next life you become a man, and then you can talk about spiritual life. I mean, it's almost like in the Mahabharata you have this story about Śrīla Vyāsadeva coming in contact with a worm. And the worm is squirming across the road. And Śrīla Vyāsadeva says, my dear worm, why are you squirming across the road? And the worm says, you know, there's a cart coming and I can feel the vibration. You can't hear the cart, but the road is actually vibrating a little bit. And so I'm getting the hell out of here. You know, worm about you. In those days, worms could even speak. It's an interesting children's story. So anyway, so the worm was squirming. And Vyasadeva asked him, why are you squirming? And the worm replied. And then Vyasadeva said, well, you know something? If you leave your body now, guess what? We got a surprise for you. You'll become a little higher in your next life. You'll take a body a little higher in your next life. I guess it's a worm with wings on it, a butterfly or something. Metamorphosis. And then the next life, higher, 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 higher. And you go through, I don't know how many species there are between worm and human being. I mean, there's 8,400,000 total. But, you know, when you start from a worm, maybe it's about 8 million instead of 8,400,000 or something. I mean, I haven't calculated it. So anyway, so he said, you just work your way up gradually, gradually, gradually. And eventually you become a Shudra. And then when you become a Vaishya, and I'll be your guru when you're a Vaishya, and I'll be your guru when you're a Kshatriya, and I'll be your guru when you're a Brahmin. And then after you're a Brahmin, you go back to God. So the worm said, Haribo. And remained in the middle of the road, and the cart went squish. Or the worm went squish. But the cart, it was a squishy sound. And that's actually what happened. So the worm had to work its way up, or the entity in the worm's body had to work his way up, or her way, I don't know if it was a female worm. had to work her way all the way up to being, you know, Brahman, and go back to God. That's an interesting statement. Whereas in Lord Chaitanya's movement, you have dogs that go back to Godhead. Two of them, in fact. One was Lord Chaitanya's puppy when he was young. And the other one was the dog of Sivananda Sen, or the dog that Sivananda Sen was taking care of, the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through coconut pulp, too, green coconut pulp. And the dog was chanting Hare Krishna on his hind legs and went back to Godhead. So, and you contrast the two right there. So anyway, we are members of Lord Chaitanya's movement. It's Kali Yuga. And whatever happened in other yugas, we're fortunate enough to be in Kali Yuga. So, Kalera Doshivade Rajanashya Go Mahaguna Kirtanadeva Krishna Shya Mukti Sangha Parambraja. That if one takes shelter of Krishna's name, even though it's a difficult age, an ocean of quarrel, an ocean of difficulty, then you can achieve Krishna consciousness. In any species of life, you know, what to speak of a man or a woman or a child or whatever manifestation you have. So, I mean, that's one point to understand, that anybody can go back to Godhead. So therefore women can go back to Godhead, and women can also become gurus. And that's also a controversial discussion going on right now in the Krishna conscious movement. We've had several votes. It's interesting in the GBC. You see a lot of interesting things happening. There was one vote maybe about 10 years ago to study the situation. Okay, so they turned it over to what's called the SAC. SAC is an abbreviation for the Kshatriya Advisory Committee, the GBC. The SAC. Sometimes people get upset with what the SAC comes up with, and they say, SAC the SAC. You know, SAC the SAC, you know, and it gets rid of it. So anyway, so after a year, the SAC came up with this paper that women could become gurus, and actually there was a whole line of women gurus in our sampradaya. I mean, they're not the most prominent members. When we read the disciplic succession, when we read about the members in the disciplic succession, particularly in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, you just have the main links. But the disciplic succession is like a tree. It branches off. I mean, a tree is not just the trunk. You have all these branches and sub-branches, and all the branches, sub-branches, and sub-sub-sub-sub-branches are connected to the tree, which is ultimately connected to the root. And they're all getting nutrition. So if you look at all the sub-branches of our sampradaya, you'll find a good percentage are ladies, which is interesting. So they came up with this paper, good percentage of ladies, nothing against our philosophy. Prabhupada also said that all my disciples, boys and girls at that time, because none of us are boys or girls anymore. We're just old, whatever. I don't want to use the word boogers. Anyway, we're just old people. So Prabhupada said, I want them all to become. See, he used that expression, boys and girls, you know, become disciples, all my disciples. So there were all these quotes. That was presented to the GBCs. GBC said, okay, let's pass a resolution, women become gurus. Okay. So then when it comes down to it, you know, comes down to it, actually, the moment of truth, that there's some applications, then the GBC votes, well, what should we do about this? Let's put it on hold. So it was decided like 8 years ago that women could become gurus, and there's been two applications. And the first one was shot down for other reasons. And the second one has been put on hold, and we're trying to come to a conclusion on the matter, but it's always just like a hung vote. You know, in other words, 50%, 50%. Every time there's a vote on the matter, so it's just delayed and delayed and delayed, and eventually it's going to make its way to our meeting in Tirupati, which is going to be in October. The meeting in Tirupati, we're supposed to discuss this for 4 days. Probably won't come to a conclusion again. And then it's going to be put on hold. So it's just an interesting phenomenon. Even though historically, in our sampradaya, women have been gurus as Prabhupada's instructions, somehow or other, you know, there's some issues with that. Now, I'm not going to examine why people have issues with that. That's a whole other discussion. You know, why people have issues with ladies becoming instructors. But getting back to the point here, it's not that we're saying that if women become gurus or if we have women gurus, of course we already have women, siksha gurus, not shikshas, the siksha gurus. There's a difference in the pronunciation. Actually, in Hebrew, shiksha means a lady who is not Jewish. And siksha means to give instruction. You gotta remember to pronounce these things right. You can't say we want women shiksha gurus, and men who are not Jewish are called shegets. A little language lesson for you today, Yiddish language lesson. So we already have ladies who are shiksha gurus, and shiksha guru means exactly the same thing as diksha guru. I mean, people make such a distinction, isn't it? Actually, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita not to make a distinction between siksha guru and diksha guru. There's different functions, but they're just as important. And in fact, in our sampradaya, siksha is considered more important than diksha. I mean, if you really read the whole line of the cyclic succession here in the Bhagavad Gita, you will actually see. Let's get after the introduction. You will actually see that some of the links are not actually diksha links. Like when you have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and you go to Baladev Vijayabhushana. Baladev Vijayabhushana was actually the siksha disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And of course you have Jagannath Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was the siksha guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you see that there's a lot of these siksha links here, and this is considered, and that's really the essence of the sampradaya instruction. Of course, diksha is essential, but siksha is actually more important in a very real sense, and that's why in the Krishna Conscious Movement we consider the position of Srila Prabhupada to be preeminent in everyone's life. Everyone's lives, because siksha is actually more important. So anyway, so there's already ladies functioning, giving siksha, giving class, guiding people, so why not recognize it? But, however, we do not advocate that women take sannyas. Now, one may say, you know, why not? We're supposed to have equality between men and women. Well, there's actually physiological reasons for that, and, you know, to get down to physiology. Just like, for example, if you have a bicycle, we don't recommend you take it on the interstate. The person riding the bicycle is equal to the person riding the Mercedes. But we don't recommend, in other words, I'm not saying one is less than the other. Actually, the person riding the bicycle may be better because they're in better shape. Because they exercise every day, whereas the person driving the Mercedes may be just like fat, overweight, and ready to die from a heart attack. So it's not that one is better than the other, it's just that there's specific functions for different types of bodies. So ladies have a certain nature, and that nature, of course, is a female nature. That means, basically, according to the brain physiology, because we're going to get into it now, I'm not going to talk about, you know, a lesser weight of brain or anything like that, is that there's different things that do to the interconnection with the brain and the emotional nature and all those other things which don't have to be discussed in Bhagavatam class, where the lady is more vulnerable. And that's really the key, the vulnerability both emotionally and usually physically too. Physically and emotionally. Of course, I mean, there's exceptions as far as the physical vulnerability. You see sometimes like these ladies in the, what is it, the roller derbies or something like that. I'm sure Gopal knows about that. In the roller derbies, you know, where they're maybe just like so strong they could pick up 10 of me and throw me like beam safe. But that's an exception. But generally, there's this vulnerability. And I would say the emotional vulnerability is actually more important in this particular respect. Emotional vulnerability means that people can... Of course, you know, getting back to Kali Yuga, I don't want to say it's always the case, but men in Kali Yuga, you know, they're just not the same as they always were. And they can be also swayed by their emotions. But generally, the ladies are more swayed by emotions. And the interesting thing about emotions is that your emotions can sway you in such a way that you're doing things that are counterproductive to your material and spiritual welfare. Just like I was speaking to someone, one of my disciples, who is like a nurse in a mental ward. And he was explaining to me, like, you know, sort of the things that were going on there. And I said, well, don't they know better? Can't they control it? Haven't they watched that movie, A Better Mind? A Beautiful Mind, haven't they watched that movie? And he said, they just don't have the intelligence for it. Their emotions overcome them. And that person in the movie, A Beautiful Mind, he was able to overcome his schizophrenia, and where he was seeing things that didn't actually exist, just because he was able to use his strong intelligence. So, I'm not saying that women should be in a psychological war. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that when we have stronger emotions, they tend to overcome our intelligence. And Krishna consciousness to make the intelligence very strong. So in general, and there are exceptions, in general, the women have stronger emotions, so they have to be protected from being exploited. And actually, this is in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. This is something that's quite commonly spoken about, that if all the men are killed, it's one of Arjuna's arguments, if all the men are killed, the women will be exploited, family traditions will be lost, there'll be unwanted progeny and all that other nice stuff. And you actually see, like Prabhupada commented, that the men were behind the whole women's liberation movement in two ways. Prabhupada talked about how, you know, what do they say, if milk is available freely in the marketplace, who's going to go to the trouble of keeping a cow? In other words, the men like women's liberation because they don't have to take responsibility. Especially nowadays, people don't get married. In general, in Europe, most of the people who have children don't get married. They just like shack up with each other. I don't know what the percentage is in America. So that's one reason the men have been behind women's liberation. Another reason is the men have been exploiting the women, abusing the women, mistreating the women. And so naturally, the women develop the male characteristics to try to counteract that, to protect themselves. So in both ways, the first... The first explanation was given by Prabhupada, the second one I'm giving. And Prabhupada actually indicated the same thing too, you know, when the women are not protected, etc. So the whole point of the society is not that the women can't go back to Godhead, be gurus and everything like that, but the whole point of one of the main points of Varnashram society is the women are protected. And so you have this whole system. They're protected by the fathers, by the children, by the husband, like that. And Prabhupada actually said that we can have an arrangement in our Krishna conscious movement that the ladies will be protected by the society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Of course, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is not as developed right now to be able to carry out those particular functions in general. Just like I was in Vancouver and I was speaking to someone who had been serving the temple for 30 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, they changed GBCs and the GBC said, hit the road, Jack, to him and his wife. He and his wife have 60 years of service between them. You know, living very simply, you know, not contributing anything to a retirement fund or anything like that. And they were told, basically, you know, go to India for a year and we don't know if you'll have an apartment when you come back. So, I mean, so just practically, ISKCON will get to the stage where, you know, people can protect different people. You know, because it's not only women that need to be protected, it's us old folks, too. Old folks, Brahmins, children, you know, these are the vulnerable elements of society, because even the old folks are vulnerable. You know, maybe because their physical strength is not so great anymore, and their ability to earn money is not so great anymore, their mental capacities may be diminishing as they get older. So therefore, you know, that's why the old people have to be protected, because there's an advertisement. Actually, obviously, I have something to gain from this. So, and then obviously the children, you know, we have our child protection teams and everything like that. And the women have to be the vulnerable members of society. It's not bad to be vulnerable, it's just like practical. I'm not complaining that I'm getting old, I'm vulnerable. You know, protect me. Of course, some people think they need protection from me. At least Gopal thinks that. So anyway, so that's really the point. That's why women can't, because what does sannyas mean? Sannyas means you travel alone. Like Prabhupada, for example, the Trivikram Maharaj went to Korea to preach, and he said, there's no one here to go with me. And Prabhupada, there's a letter. Prabhupada said, you know, Krishna's with you. You know, what kind of sannyasi are you? Of course, Prabhupada didn't say that, but that was the underlying mood of the letter to him. You know, you're taking sannyas. You know, the first quality of sannyas is abhaya, sattva, sam, shuddhi, jnana, yogi, vastu, tahi, as mentioned by Krishna in the Gita. Abhaya, free of fear. Why? Because sattva, he's in goodness and he's been cultivating knowledge, but, you know, basically free of fear. He has to be ready to go anywhere. I mean, people ask me sometimes, you know, does anyone travel in the plane to take care of you? I said, my God. First of all, it's too expensive. You know, second of all, that would mean I would have to take care of him. Because any time someone travels with me, I'm always worried. You got your passport? You got your sniffles? You know, just, yeah, it's like that. That's why I don't take devotees on tour anymore. We had 30 devotees, 35, several tours we did in South India. It was like, I understood what it meant to be a parent at that point. Helped me maintain my renounced order of life. So anyways, you know, just like, basically, waking everybody up every morning, changing diapers. Not really. So, but what's the fear? And if you die, you die. Like Prabhupada said, give him the benediction of leaving his body like a kshatriya, fighting for Krishna. You know, the devotees sometimes worry about dying, And they were saying to Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was talking about World War III, they said to Prabhupada, what are the bombs for? And we can't grow anything. Then what will happen, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, we will die. Very nonchalantly, you know, like, huh, so what? You can die anyway. He said, only a fool will complain. I mean, I'm paraphrasing Prabhupada's words there. So, really, so that's what a sannyasi is. It travels and independent and like that. And of course, you know, a sannyasi can get exploited too, you know, in different ways. He has to be very careful. But generally, we're making generalizations that women are more vulnerable and therefore they need to be protected. Therefore, Narada Muni here is not going to Daksha's daughters and saying, would you like to be sannyasinis? Because he understands what's best for them is that they're in a protected situation. That's very pious. And then they become powerful like that, like Savitri and Satyavan. They become more powerful than the men. I mean, you have that story in the Markandeya Purana where the man and the woman's name. Anyway, the woman was able to stop the rising of the sun to protect her husband just by her chastity. I mean, just very powerful personalities. Like Gandhari was able to curse Krishna. Do you know that? She cursed Krishna that his dynasty would self-destruct too, just like her dynasty self-destructed. And that's what happened. You know, of course, that was Krishna's plan. But Krishna was showing the power of a chaste woman. So that's the point. The woman remains chaste and pious. And, of course, yes, use intelligence. They can't be a situation of abuse. On that happy note, it's nice to see Gopal here. I think you all remember him. Okay. All glories to his